This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasuthi. In our Health and Living segment today, we're going to be discussing children, their stomach aches, and, you know, how much of it is actually stress-related. In the studio with me, Professor Dr. Christopher Boy Cheong Meng. He's a consultant pediatric gastroenterologist from University of Malaya Medical Center. Welcome to the show, Dr. Christopher. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me. Thank you.
You know, you started the unit of pediatric gastroenterology, hepatology, and even nutrition in UMMC, and this was back in 1993. You were the first staff. You set it up on your own, obviously. Why did you think there was a need to set up the unit?
In fact, when I came back from the UK to Malaysia in 1992, the Department of Pediatrics was quite small, and we were all general pediatricians. And we started to think that it was important to look at different subspecialties. One of the specialties that was not looked at that time was pediatric gastroenterology. Mm-hmm. So, in fact, I started that because of the need for it.
You came back from the UK in 1992, yes. And obviously you had some exposure there and decided that there was a need for this unit. What was it that triggered?
I think the issue was that at the time there was a lot of problems with diarrhea. Of course, today the scene has changed, but because of that not being dealt with, we felt that it was important to establish a unit to deal with it.
So 25 years ago, you dealt with diarrhea. How different is that today? I still hear of diarrhea. It's still a problem 25
diarrhea
years
later. Diarrhea is still a problem.
Yes, it is.
It's a perennial problem.
Why is that? I mean, we try our best to feed our children, you know, fresh food and give them only the best. But what is it that triggers the diarrhea?
Because the cause for diarrhea is so diverse. There are so many different reasons. Of course, the important ones would be infection. But apart from infection, there are so many other things that can cause a diarrhea. For example, stress can lead to irritable bowel, which leads to diarrhea. Mm-hmm. Certain other conditions, like endocrine conditions, can cause a feeling of wanting to go to the toilet more often. So there are a diverse variety of causes of diarrhea. So diarrhea remains a problem. Maybe the underlying causation might change from time to time, but diarrhea remains a problem. I think it will continue to remain for a long, long time.
Sure. I mean, after 25 years, if it hasn't changed, then, you know, do you foresee it getting worse or better?
I think it will remain the same, except that we have to deal with the different causes that lead to the diarrhea.
What would you say are the causes today?
Today, the previous infective causes remain. But in addition to that, we've got problems like an increasing amount of cases of inflammatory bowel disease, mm-hmm. which can cause diarrhea. We've also have problems with functional problems where stress-related abdominal pain and diarrhea can happen. So the causes are becoming more and more diverse. Inflammatory bowel disease, which I mentioned just now, was something that we hardly saw in those days. And it was something that we used to see only in the Western countries. But in recent years, we are getting more and more cases of inflammatory bowel disease.
And mind you, you're talking about children here.
Yes.
I mean, it almost sounds like we're discussing the adults as well. I mean, it seems pretty similar. But is the digestive system of a child, is it any different from an adult?
Well, it's shorter and smaller, but it's remarkably similar.
Okay, so as far as the digestive system is concerned, the child is just a smaller version of the adult.
Yeah, because if you were to get a biopsy of a section of the small child's bowel, it looks quite similar to that of an adult. So in the terms of function, it's actually quite similar.
Similar, okay. The reason I ask is because as far as orthopedics is concerned, if you talk about the musculoskeletal system, you cannot apply that analogy. A child is not a small version of an adult because it functions very differently. Irritable bowel syndrome. You said it happened only very much in the West, in the developed world.
Inflammatory bowel disease.
Bowel disease. Why do you think it's happening here?
The real reason is not clear. In fact, the underlying causation of inflammatory bowel disease itself is not clear. It could be that possible causes could be that our way of life is becoming more Westernized. That's one reason.
And meaning food
and stress and the modern way of living. That could be one of the reasons, but the actual underlying cause is not completely clear. There's also a genetic component to it as well.
Very quickly, can you explain the difference between irritable bowel syndrome and inflammatory bowel disease?
Well, inflammatory bowel disease is where there is a definite pathology. So the gut is inflamed. if we were to do endoscopy and get biopsies, there are organic changes and abnormalities seen. With irritable bowel syndrome, the symptoms are there, but there's no organic pathology. So that's the major difference.
Idiopathic?
It's not so, not in a way idiopathic. In many cases, in irritable bowel, which can also occur in children, mind you, can be due to a variety of causes, and stress, anxiety is a common cause of it.
Okay. But IBD is a little different then?
It's different. IBD is different. That's inflammatory bowel disease. It is an organic condition where there is definite changes in the gut. There's in the pathology of the gut.
Some kind of inflammation.
Inflammation, yes.
Okay. What causes that inflammation? I'm just trying to understand the science behind it.
The underlying cause is being worked out, and there's a lot of research being done. There's autoimmune causes.
Okay.
There's also reactions to infections. And recently there's been research into the gut microbiome being affecting it as well.
Okay.
But bottom line is that the real underlying cause is still not clearly worked out. It is an inflammatory condition.
Let's talk about the gut microbiota there's so much being said about it. It's supposed to be the next medicine day going forward, medication for a lot of things. How does the gut microbiota, and we know that, you know, it develops even in while, you know, your mother's actually carrying you, and during delivery, for an example, natural delivery versus C-sections, all of that makes a difference in how you inherit good microbiota. You want to explain to me, how does the gut microbiota for infants actually develop? And then from there, you know, on into childhood and adulthood?
Yeah, as you mentioned just now, it actually develops very earlier on, even in utero, but it's affected very much after birth, when the baby begins to take milk, and when the baby starts to eat various things, and the gut microbiota therefore diversifies from that time onwards. And as the child grows older, it begins to develop and diversify. In many cases, the gut microbiota have got an important function in maintaining the basic balance. And that can sometimes be disrupted by too much antibiotics, for example.
So, to develop a good microbiota, what is it that we should not be doing for children?
There are many things we shouldn't be, but one of the important things is not to give antibiotics indiscriminately, unless it's really necessary, because that can affect the microbiota.
Okay.
To have a very healthy, balanced diet, it's important to ensure that we get a good, balanced microbiota.
I'm very curious, how much does antibiotics actually destroy the balance? I mean, to what extent does it destroy the balance? And can we not rebuild it?
When we stop the antibiotics and the child recovers, in a very natural way, the microbiota rebuilds itself. Mm-hmm. And as the child takes proper nutrition and grows well, it gradually rebuilds itself.
Okay. But, you know, a lot of us talk about probiotics for the children as well. What's your take on probiotics?
Well, if you ask me, my feeling is that the microbiota is such a complex system. It's not something that you can treat or correct with just a single probiotic. Of course, the attempt is good, but I don't think a single probiotic can deal with readdressing the balance. It's important to look at more fundamental things like the way of life, the food, and the nutrition.
You know, stress. You spoke about stress and children coming in with digestive issues. What is stress actually doing to the digestive system?
Well, there is actually a very, very delicate relationship between the gut and the nervous system. In fact, the gut is one of the organs which has a lot of nervous tissue. So stress or feelings can communicate itself very directly to the way the gut functions. So the motility, the movement of the gut, and the feeling of spasms or pain, all this is very directly related to how a person feels, and stress is, of course, an important factor there.
Do we know why, though? Why such a close relationship between the gut and the nervous system?
If we look at it from the point of view of the anatomy, as I mentioned earlier, there is actually a lot of connections between the nervous tissue of the gut and that of the brain. So from the anatomical point of view, there is a strong connection. But I think it's much deeper than that. It's something that's difficult to explain with just science, physics or chemistry. The relationship between the mind and the body is something that is being increasingly recognized by doctors and in recent years. And the underlying basis of it is also being explored, and more understanding is arising from that.
So the gut-brain, what's it called again?
The mind-body interaction, the gut-brain interaction.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. And, how do parents take to this digestive issues that children come in with? I mean, I can imagine how troubling it can be to come in with a child who's constantly having diarrhea or, having gastrointestinal conditions.
Yes. If a child comes in regularly with intestinal problems like diarrhea and abdominal pain, I take it you are talking about irritable bowel. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
One of the most important things is actually to make sure that we are not missing an organic problem. We are not missing things like infections. We are not missing inflammatory bowel disease. We are not missing the fact that the pain could be due to some endocrine problem. So it's important, therefore, for the doctor to have a very, very thorough history of the condition and to do a very thorough examination to make sure none of that is actually the cause of the symptoms. And then it's important to reassure the parents. You are asking about how the parents feel.
Yes.
I think they need the reassurance that we have actually excluded organic conditions, organic pathology, and then to reassure that there is nothing underlying in terms of treatable organic conditions. And then we deal with distress.
The psychology.
And then that's a very important part in the treatment of these children.
That must be quite difficult to diagnose, actually. The psychology. I mean, children don't, they silently live with these stresses of life, and it's very hard to actually get them to talk about it. How do you do that?
You're right. It's not easy to diagnose. I think an important thing to do is to listen. So when children come in and when the parents come in, it's important to have a very relaxed atmosphere to allow them to be able to freely talk. So I sometimes spend a lot of time with a single patient. It's not easy to get that time.
But do you tell the parents to leave? Because very often they are the causes of the stress, actually. And you will agree with me.
Yes. There are times when you actually have to talk to the child himself or herself.
Yep.
But there are times with them together. So it depends on the situation, on the case.
Okay.
But I think the point I was trying to emphasize just now is listening is important. To allow the child the kind of relaxed feeling so that the child can gradually tell you what he or she is feeling. And I think that helps a lot in terms of dealing with the pain. And it's important to also to tell that to the parents so that they will also do the same.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. The gut and the nervous system, how it works so closely together and causes so many digestive issues. We're discussing gastrointestinal conditions among children. If you have a question for us, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 0187898899. We'll come back, find out a little bit more about food allergies, some reflex and colic, and something else I want to talk to you about, Dr. Christopher, which is H. pylori. Is it common amongst children in Malaysia? We'll come back and discuss that. Up next on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivisodi. In our Health and Living segment today, we're discussing your child's stomach and the aches that they get because of stress. In the studio, also explaining why this is happening is Professor Dr. Christopher Boy. He's a consultant pediatric gastroenterologist from University of Malaya Medical Center. I think what's coming through based on the first part of this interview is the interaction between the gut and the nervous system and how important that is. The reason why stress can actually trigger a whole lot of digestive system issues in relation to that. I think one of the other conditions you spoke about is inflammatory bowel disease, which is quite common among children. And as you said, that one is a very organic...
No, it's not quite common. It's increasing. It's still not common. But compared to years ago, it's increasing.
It's increasing. Probably due to our lifestyle, you mentioned. Food.
A number of factors.
Yeah. And that's a very organic problem, as in yes. it's caused by inflammation, something that triggers. But then, you know, the other issues triggered by stress is very functional. It can affect the digestive system as well. And you need to suss that out. And often with children, it's quite difficult. You did speak about stress just now, but we'll come back with some of your examples. We have Christine on the line. Christine, you have a question.
Hi, yeah. So this is about something that I think Dr. Bui mentioned earlier, because you're talking about, you know, these children suffering from these stomach problems. But can a very, very young child, you know, suffer from these stomach problems that are caused by stress? Like a child that's below, like, the age of 3, can they suffer from emotionally related gastrointestinal problems?
Okay. Thank you very much, Christine.
Thank you very much, Christine, for the very important question. The stress-related abdominal pains usually occur between the age of 5 to 15. When they are younger than that, of course, it can still occur, but doctors are very careful to make sure that they do not miss other conditions. Other conditions, for example, like a urinary tract infection, or, for example, they may have a condition called intussusception, which can cause severe pain intermittently. So the bottom line, the important message is that if you've got a child who's 3 years old or under and you think has got abdominal pain, it's important to make sure that we do not miss any other treatable condition.
Okay, let's talk about colic. I think a lot of parents struggle with colic. How do you manage that?
I think the first thing in terms of dealing with it is to make sure that the baby is feeding well, is gaining weight well, is otherwise growing normally. And then the examination would make sure that the child has not got any other physical abnormalities. Once that's ascertained, then it's important to make sure that the bonding and the relationship between a mother and a child is looked after as well as possible. It's important that the mother becomes as relaxed in dealing with the child as possible. In many cases, the issue, of course, the issue of colic is common, and the underlying cause is very, very diverse. But the relationship between the mother and the baby is very important in that respect.
It is so stressful, Dr. Christopher. How do you even stay calm as a mother? Trying, you can't even console the child sometimes for hours in the evening. And do we know why it happens in the evening? It seems so common at that hour.
It's important not just to know that there's a problem with the mother. It's the whole family. I think it's important that the family environment is such that it gives a very relaxed atmosphere so that the baby can grow in a very relaxed way. I think that has an important factor. Why it occurs a lot at night, well, it's hard to answer the
question. You did say causes are very diverse. What are some of the causes?
The different stresses that a young mother might go through. For example, the mother might be worried that she's not looking after the baby well enough.
That can trigger colic?
And the baby can sense it. Babies are very sensitive.
Really? Mm.
Babies can more sensitive than you can imagine. And if they sense a sense of insecurity in the mother, they can start to scream. Of course, as I said, before we can say that, it's important that the doctor examines and make sure that we are not missing. I'm not saying that all colic or all pain is due to that, but it's important that the doctor ensures that he or she is not missing any organic problems. And once that is done, then it's important to make sure that the mother is able to look after the baby with a very reassured and calm mind. It's not easy to do that, but there you are. That's the challenge of looking after children and mothers.
When you say colic, what do you mean?
Well, the definition is quite diverse, again. Some babies screaming and crying and not being pacified. When babies scream, for example, they become red in the face, and that's quite common. If the baby screams and becomes pale, that is an important sign, for example, for us to note. There may be some underlying problems.
Then my understanding of colic is completely different. My understanding of colic is gas. It's wind in the stomach. And I know you doctors hate that term, but is there no link at all to, you know, having a windy stomach?
Well, if there's a problem, for example, with digestion, If a baby has a digestive problem, and there can be an increase in the amount of gas that's produced, and that discomfort can cause the baby to sometimes scream or cry. But that's not the most common
cause of it.
That's not the most common cause of it. There are many babies who scream, even though on examination there's not much gas in the abdomen.
Okay, but you can feel it. When they come in, you can actually feel it. Okay. So a calm mother is really...
A calm, reassured mother, and that's the challenge.
Of course.
And of course, I think it's important to note that it's not just the mother's issue. The father has got to give the support.
Mm-hmm.
It has got to be a family effort.
That's a huge hint there, you know. Daddies, you have a role to play in this. When you talk about digestive system, H. pylori is something that... It's actually a bacteria, am I correct? Which sits in the stomach and causes some issues, sometimes to the extent of stomach cancer. But how common is it in children compared to adults?
It is not that common nowadays, less than 10%. There's a survey that was done a couple of years ago in Malaysia, it's under 10%. But the important thing to note is that H. pylori does cause certain pathology, for example, stomach ulcers or duodenal ulcers. But the majority of children who've got abdominal pain, the pain is not caused by the H. pylori. So it's very important that we do not just focus on getting the organism and treating the organism, because we may be barking up the wrong tree.
Mm-hmm.
When there's symptoms or signs that suggest pathology that might be caused by H. pylori, for example, if there is bleeding from an ulcer, if there is nocturnal wakening, the child waking up at night with severe pain that might be attributable to an ulcer, then we have to assess that pain based on those symptoms and decide how further to investigate it. And if we discover an ulcer that's related to H. pylori, then we need to treat it. But to simply just treat all children on a trial basis to clear the bacteria, just because it's got abdominal pain, you may be over-treating.
Okay. And, you spoke about stress and its effect on the digestive system. Could you give me some examples? Because I understand in your practice you've seen this full-blown interaction. Tell me how it works.
Yeah. Well, because it's... I've realized the importance of stress. A couple of years ago, I did a sabbatical in Japan, specifically in a psychiatry unit. And I wanted to observe how stress actually interacts or affects a patient. I was in the clinic one day, and there was a patient who came in with the father. And the problem was that the child was not eating well, was not actually growing properly, and also having a lot of abdominal pain. The whole interview was conducted in Japanese, so there was a language barrier.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the interview, I felt I had to say something and get it translated by my friend. So I told her a poem from a poet that I admired very much, my mentor, Dr. Daisaku Ikeda.
Mm-hmm.
And the poem actually says that there's something vaster than the open sky, and that's my life. There's something deeper than the sea, and that's your life. And there's something more precious than all the treasures of the universe, and that's all our lives. When I mentioned that to her, she felt more relaxed and happy. And a week later, I was very moved that she sent me a letter to say that that really reassured her. And she invited us to go to her home. The parents did as well. And when we were there, we listened carefully to all her complaints.
How old is this child?
This child was in the late teens.
Okay.
So when we listened, when there was somebody to listen to her and help her deal with those issues, her symptoms actually got better. So that was one example that really emphasized to me the importance of listening, which is what I mentioned earlier. There was another child who had very severe abdominal pain. This child was less than 10 years old. He used to be admitted to our hospital with severe vomiting and severe abdominal pain, and he had been investigated very fully, and yet nothing was found. After a couple of visits, we sat down carefully and listened more deeply to the story, and we found that the child kept talking about a grandfather who had passed away. And we realized that the grandfather had committed suicide because of some concerns about of some guilt feelings that the grandfather had when he was younger as a soldier. The parents did not want to talk about it. So the child, who was very attached to the grandfather, did not have any way of resolving it.
No closure as such.
No closure. So he presented to us with abdominal pain and vomiting. When we recognized that point and had a family conference and talked to the parents about it, the child gradually got better. Because when it was out in the open and they started to talk about it, the abdominal pain got better. What I'm trying to emphasize is that it's important to make sure that we don't miss things like H. pylori or ulcers or inflammatory bowel disease. But having done that, it's very important to also look at the impact of psychosocial stress on the symptoms in the child, particularly gastrointestinal symptoms have got a very close relationship to the way a child feels.
You know, you're a gastroenterologist, but chances are when a child presents with this pain, they're just going to go to a primary healthcare practitioner. And sometimes it's easy to dismiss as just, you know, either attention-seeking or, you know, just gas, for an example. What are the dangers of just brushing it off?
I think it's very dangerous. As I said, it's very important to know that although there's a lot of stress involved, there is also a percentage of children where the pain is due to an organic condition. By organic, I mean you can identify a pathology, an abnormality, and that needs to be treated. So doctors cannot actually brush it aside. It must take the child seriously. I think that's the first step to winning. And that applies also to the parents, to take it seriously. By taking it seriously, even in situations where there's nothing found, even when the pain is stress-related, it's important for the doctors not to brush it aside. It's important to really recognize that the pain that the child is feeling is very real. For example, if you've been working all day or I've been working all day, I'll have a terrible headache. But if I do a scan, it doesn't mean that I've got a tumor.
Right? Mm-hmm.
So, but it doesn't mean that my pain is not real. It doesn't mean that your pain is not real. And I think it's very important, both for parents and for the doctors, to recognize that the child's pain is genuine. If we brush it aside, like what you said just now, then we already lost the first battle.
How powerful is that? We're discussing your child's digestive system, and when we come back, we will go into, you know, something that, you know, we all struggle with, which is food allergies, coming up next. If you have a question for Dr. Christopher Boy, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. If you have just joined us, it's our Health and Living segment and we're discussing your child's gastrointestinal tract and, you know, digestive system issues amongst children. In the studio with us, Professor Dr. Christopher Boy from University Malaya Medical Centre. He's a consultant pediatric gastroenterologist. If you have a question for us, once again, give us a call. The number is 03-77-109-000. You can actually tweet BFM Radio or WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You know, there is these GI symptoms like diarrhea and vomiting. If it presents persistently, Dr. Christopher, how would it affect your child's growth and development?
If it presents very persistently, then the important thing is to make sure that the nutrition is intact. And doctors do that by plotting the child's growth, the height and the weight along a chart. And if the child is progressing well along that chart, then there's nothing to worry about. But if there are problems with that normal growth, then it's important for the doctors to make sure that the underlying cause of that diarrhea and vomiting is properly investigated and treated.
How long do you wait, though, before we actually come in? Because sometimes diarrhea can go off, you know, in a day, sometimes 2 days. But how long do you wait?
If it's an acute diarrhea, which is extremely common, it happens all the time. So normally parents will bring their child to see a general practitioner or general pediatrician who will then diagnose it as an acute gastroenteritis, which is the most common cause. And if the child is otherwise well, growing well, that will come to pass easily and there's no need to take any further. If it persists, for example, in a baby, if it goes on for 2 weeks or more and becomes chronic, then we have to start thinking whether there's some underlying condition that's predisposing to a chronic diarrhea.
What's a normal to a child in terms of his digestion? I mean, is it how many bowel movements a day? You know, what type of stool are you looking out for?
That is extremely variable. So I don't think it's good for us to have a fixed idea of how often a child should go to open his bowels, or how many times a day, or how many days once. Because if a parent gets too concerned about that, then they can be too absorbed dealing with looking at just emotions. I think the important thing is whether there's a change in the bowel habit. For example, if the child has been passing motion normally, but becomes constipated and not passing, then of course we need to look at that. Constipation is an extremely common problem. In addition to the recurrent abdominal pains that we were talking earlier, it's an extremely common problem. But the important thing is to make sure that we see whether there's a change or whether that has always been what the child has been like. And at the same time, it's important to know whether the child is growing properly, is gaining weight normally.
Is constipation all about fiber and, you know, the amount of fluids you're taking in?
Fluid, of course, is important. The fiber is not so important as it is in the adult. Of course, it plays a part. The toilet training is very important in terms of constipation. Of course, just like in abdominal pain, it's important for the doctor to make sure that there's no pathological underlying cause of the constipation. For example, certain diseases like Hirschsprung's disease, or some electrolyte abnormalities like calcium abnormalities or thyroid abnormalities. All that may have a relationship with constipation. But having excluded that from the history and examination, by and large, a large number of children who present with constipation have got what we call a functional constipation. And it's interesting how this problem develops. The child would have been, the baby would have been well in the first year of life, passing fairly normal stools. And by the age of about maybe between 1 to 2 years, something triggers the constipation. And usually it is a situation where the child feels initially the urge to open his bowels, but then holds back for various reasons. For example, he might be very interested in doing something or playing something, but holds back. In an older child, the child might be afraid of school toilets, for example.
Oh, yes.
Wanting to go, but holding back. The problem with holding back is that when that's done too persistently, then the lower bowel, the rectum, loses its sensation. And when that happens, eventually, the child will accumulate stool without recognizing the sensation to want to open his or her bowels.
Right.
And that's when the constipation develops. And the stool can accumulate to enormous amounts. And that is a very common problem that we see in the clinic. And the typical history that we see is that the child has got constipation for a long time, and then out of a sudden, he seems to pass something like what we call a cow dung, a big piece. So if mother says that that happens, that means that has been stool that has been accumulated. And that part of history is important. Yeah. And as I said, if we recognize that that is the problem, then explanation, very careful, detailed explanation of how the problem has developed to the mother and the father is very important. Because by doing that, we know that the first thing to do is to make sure that we evacuate that obstruction and then give some ways of softening the motion and helping the child to come back to a normal routine.
And then come back. I mean, you need to find out what was the cause in the first place, isn't it?
That's right.
And it's usually psychological as well?
No, as I said just now, it's for the functional ones, it's usually when the child holds back.
Okay.
And I want to emphasize that it's important that the doctor makes sure that there's no pathological problems. Once we've ensured that there's no pathological problems, and there are a series of examinations and tests that we can do to make sure. Once we are sure and confident that there's no pathological problem, then we deal with the functional aspect of the constipation.
I've heard very much of stories where teachers don't allow children to go to the toilet during class, and so
yes,
they
I've
hold
heard
back.
That too.
Yeah,
yes.
And then that causes a whole load of issues.
Exactly,
as well.
Exactly.
Chris, you have a question, Chris?
Yes, I have a question to doctor. Doctor.
Hello.
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 I'd like to ask a question.
Yes.
My son, he's 8 this year. He school is always very hard, and he's always, I mean, like 2 days once he goes to the toilet, and he feels really hard and like really, really, how do I say, how do I describe it? It's really, he always feels pain after he goes to the loo.
Has that always been the case, or is it a recent development?
It's all this while, since he was like age of 3 or 4.
So
and then I've been giving him a lot of fibers, but it still happens until now. When I bring him to the pediatric, the doctor said it's normal so long he goes to the toilet.
Okay.
But I found recently is that he's always complaining about his stomach pain after he takes some food on and off. I'm not sure whether he's fussy on food or anything, but when I ask him where the pain comes from, he just says stomach. From the left, right, or middle, he doesn't describe it.
Okay.
So you were saying from the age of 3 until now, when the child is 8 years old, he's been otherwise well. He's growing well.
He's
developing normally.
Normal.
Yeah. So the constipation is the only problem?
Yes.
Yeah. Has he had anything like what you've been listening to my discussion with Mira just now? Has he had some of the things that I mentioned earlier? Like, for example, holding back in a dirty school toilet. He's 8 years old, dirty school toilet, holding back and not able to empty his bowels properly. Has he had that problem?
If it's school or he's outside, yes, he will hold.
Yeah. So it looks like exactly what I mentioned to Mira just now. It's important to make sure that we are not missing anything else. And it's difficult for me to do that in the air.
Yep. You know?
But it's important that the doctor make sure that there's nothing pathological. And once that's established, it's important then to look carefully at his diet, whether he's drinking adequate water and whether he's taking enough vegetable and fiber, and then to then make sure whether on examination whether he's got the problem I mentioned just now, whether he's got an accumulation of stool in the lower bowel. And if that's the case, then we need to have certain treatments to remove that and to soften his stool. But we can only do that after an examination. I think it's difficult for me to give you more detailed information on the air.
Okay. Thank you very much for that question, Chris. We have another one via WhatsApp. My child is 2 years old and his appetite suddenly changed drastically in the past 1 week. He doesn't want to eat rice and he only wants bread. What do I do?
So he's becoming European, changing from rice to bread. So the important thing is whether he actually eats. All right. Some children, as they grow up, they may change and choose some other types of food. The important thing is whether after eating, he or she grows normally. I think you will have heard me say several times throughout this session that for a pediatrician, in terms of assessing a child, the growth and in terms of height and weight gain is crucial. And the general activity ability to play happily is very important. If the child is able to do all that and the doctor doesn't find anything abnormal on examination, then it's important not to be too upset if the child changes his liking for certain foods. I think you and me probably might change from time to time in terms of the type of food we like.
Absolutely.
Is that all right?
Yes, that's perfectly fine. Chris, hopefully that answers your question via WhatsApp. Last question, Dr. Christopher. Food allergies, cow's milk, peanut allergies are all on the rise. Why do you think that's the case? It's the parents again. When you don't know why, you just blame the parents. It's like the dirty toilets, you know. We didn't have a choice. We just went to dirty toilets. Today, the children are a lot more aware of cleanliness, and so they don't want to put up with the, you know, not so clean toilets. So allergies then.
Yeah. Well, the various things either in food or in environment are extremely common. And then this has been around for ages. It's how we react to it that matters. If you look at people in the some of the Aboriginal areas, the allergies are not so common. They are able to deal with dirt.
Dirt, yeah.
Is in the very developed situation, environment, our ability to deal with these things have gone down, and so we react much more often to these allergens. And the reaction can be in various forms. It can be in forms of food allergy, we can have diarrhea, or it can be in the form of skin problems. The underlying cause of it is multifactorial.
What's your advice then?
My advice is to ensure that the child is able to grow up in an environment that's not necessarily too sterile, to get used to various things in the environment, and therefore become stronger and being able to cope with all kinds of different allergens.
Okay, thank you very much for joining us today. So I suppose you have an aversion to wet wipes and hand sanitizers. I mean, we do need it sometimes, but possibly not all the time, would you say?
Yeah, it's important to be clean as well, but it's important not to be overly obsessed.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
it, yeah.
Thank you very much for sharing your thoughts with us. Professor Dr. Christopher Boy, a consultant pediatric gastroenterologist from University of Malaya Medical Center, speaking to us about your child's stomach, the stresses that cause gastrointestinal conditions. On The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.